Bitter cold is the story this morning, with much of the country seeing temperatures well below average.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Well, it's interesting, Bob, because I would say, this time I'd probably use the term, it's softer than I think people think it is. I don't mean it's weak. You know, now the GDP, you know, comes out for the third quarter, 2.9%. I don't think it was a 2.9% quarter.
Commerce, education, and the, what's the third one there? Let's see.
What is energy?
Energy is the ability to do work, the ability to cause motion and change.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Tuesday. It's December 13, 2016. 5:09 in the morning, almost 5:10. Good to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day as we kick in this Tuesday edition of the program. The Federal Reserve Open Market Committee meeting is going to get underway. The big Federal Reserve rate hike is in our rearview mirrors almost. Everybody says it's in the bag. We'll find out. The big news conference coming tomorrow with Janet Yellen after the two-day meeting of the Federal Reserve. The interest rate decisions are probably in the bag. Now the Open Market Committee is probably going to turn its attention to the Trump administration and what to expect. There is likely to be a little bit of movement in terms of changing policy, changing the roadmap just a little as we move into 2017, given the inauguration of a new president. But that'll be something that we'll be talking about as we move through the next day or so. Again, 97% probability that the Fed will raise rates by a quarter of a percentage point at the end of its two-day meeting on Wednesday. That's according to CME Group. And their poll that they take about that. So pretty much a done deal. We've got some other big numbers for you before we hit the Associated Bank Market Desk. This just across the desk here from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. And it's from Tim McGill, our meteorologist. He's done some models for the weekend for this snow. And I'll just read you his tweet that he's put out. Stay calm and shovel on. The GFS model suggests over a foot of snow late Friday into Saturday, and the Chicago Metro is right there along the line of 14.3 inches. The weather outside is frightful indeed. Let's go to the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are way up this morning, 74 points. The S&P NASDAQ futures are a little bit higher as well. The crude oil futures are trading 53.04 a barrel, up just about a half a percent this morning. All of the European markets are higher. All of the Asian markets are higher today. Lots of green arrows across the board, and we like to see that. Some news, you're probably all trumped out of news this morning, but he is making headlines again this morning. He's made his selection, we believe, for the Secretary of State, also for the Secretary of Energy, former Governor of Texas Rick Perry, who in the opening montage there, remember that debate, he couldn't even remember the Department of Energy when he said he wanted to eliminate some agencies in the government. But that is apparently Donald Trump's pick for Secretary of Energy. Also today, buying things online could get pricier if the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a case that could ultimately lead to states collecting billions of dollars in sales tax lost to Internet retailers. The court would not hear a challenge to a Colorado law requiring online sellers like Amazon to notify customers and the state how much they owe in taxes. State officials have estimated that Colorado alone has been missing out on as much as $172 million a year. At least three other states, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Vermont, have passed similar laws. Though the court didn't endorse Colorado's law and couldn't even weigh in against it if it was given a different case, other states are likely to see Monday's move as a green light to step up their collection efforts in this area. Thinking about buying a drone for the holidays? Lots of people are. It is on the list of Christmas lists, top of Christmas lists all around the world. We're happy with us to have with us today the drone girl, as she's known, Carmen Means, is with us today. She's one of the people in Chicago who's flying drones around the legal way, doing work with it. And Carmen, welcome to the Opening Bell this morning.
Thank you. Welcome.
Well,
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you. We kind of joked in our promo that this has nothing to do with Star Wars today because a lot of people are talking about Star Wars. You're one of the drone people that are making money and doing this the legal way. Tell us a little bit about your business.
Well, we are a I'm Chicago born and raised. Me and my partner, Micah Stambaugh, and we're both Chicago area born and raised, but I was actually born in the city, and then later my parents shipped us out to the suburbs. But we are a minority-owned business, and I fly drones. My 9-to-5 job is a I'm a photojournalist by trade, and I've been doing that for about 13 years. I got off into drones about 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, and you know, it's just been an ongoing process of, you know, getting licensing and then finding work actually of a craft that I kind of already was already knew and had already perfected.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into some of the nitty-gritty of the business because I have lots of questions for you. But generally, you would do what? Take a video of from the sky of what kinds of things?
Well, we do things with vineyards. We do golf courses. We can do just about anything. But just about any industry that you think of, whether it's agricultural, automotive, construction, media, they're all different industries that are very engrossed and entrenched in and very interested in doing drone aerial photography.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, we're talking with the drone girl from Chicago, the company dronegirlphotography.com. Carmen Means is with us, a photojournalist of the year in 2015, so you know your stuff. We want to ask you a lot of questions about the regulations, about the ins and outs of drone flying. We'll have to do that after we take a break, though, here for traffic as we hit 5:15 on the WGN Associated Bank market desk this morning. A couple of stocks of local interest we're watching. The movers this morning include Mondelez International, up almost 1.5%. Some of the stocks in trouble today include Peabody Energy Company. Caterpillar Incorporated is down this morning. And also Deere & Company's off almost 1.5%. It's 5:20 on the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks pulled back yesterday after a week-long record run, although a spurt in oil prices Monday helped to push energy issues higher. The S&P 500 slipped 2 points. The NASDAQ Composite lost 31. The Dow bucked the trend and climbed 39 points, closing at 19,796, another record high. That bump in crude oil will translate into higher gasoline prices. Some analysts expect to see $3 fuel early in 2017. Southwest Airlines now has 100 destinations on its route map after launching its first flights to Havana, Cuba yesterday. That carrier joined 6 other airlines in offering scheduled service from the U.S. to Cuba for the first time in half a century. And buying things online could get pricier after the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a case out of Colorado. That state and others might now be forced to collect billions of dollars in sales taxes. Online shoppers have always owed those taxes, but the rules have largely been ignored. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. On this morning, the drone girl, Carmen Means, is up with us. The drone girl photog at Twitter, at drone girl photog, and then online as well. You can check them out at dronegirlphotography.com. I'm kind of interested in talking a little bit about what you've had to go through to get this business off the ground. I'm betting when you started, there were no regulations. You didn't have to get a license or anything. How has that changed?
Well, it's changed because the FAA, there was approximately last year about this time, there were over 1 million drones that were sold during the holiday season. So that number kind of doubled and jumped from the previous year where there was only about 500,000 sold. So the FAA figured that they needed to do something to just regulate things. So that's when before you had to have if you were flying and wanted to do it commercially, you could get what's called an exemption 333. to be able to fly commercially and legally. And but since pretty much August or September of this year, now you have to have what's called a Part 107 to be able to fly commercially, because there are just so many of them that are now just flying around, and have so many of them that have been bought. They're probably, the estimate is probably now over 1.5 to 2 million drones that have been bought.
Yeah, I saw one estimate that there are more of these drones flying than there are people with pilot license in the United States.
Yes. So about right. That's about right. So when you have the Part 107, you have to go take pretty much a pilot's exam just for a small UAV, UAS aircraft. And it's a pretty intense exam to take. The FAA just wants to make sure that you, or drone users, especially operating commercially, really know the rules of airspace. So that's how this is, that's why this all came about, because we don't want incidents of people flying drones into commercial aircraft and into the airspace and causing some major things to happen.
So, you know, with people, I mentioned at the top of the program that a lot of people have these drones again on their Christmas list this year. That number that you mentioned of people with drones likely to grow even further after the holidays. What would your number one advice be for somebody who's planning on getting one of these having one of them around Christmas time? What do they need to know, the number one or number two things?
Number one is who you're buying for and what capacity do they want to operate the drone in. You can technically have a drone starting at the age of 13. So, you know, do you want to get a 13-year-old a drone that may cost about $1,500 plus up to $3,000, and he needs to have all kind of regulations to do so, and it will probably crash it. So the answer to that is probably not likely. You want to start and stay within that $200 range. It's pretty harmless. The second thing that they need to know is, you know, when you purchase them and buy them, you know the rules. Even though you're a recreational flyer, you should still attempt to learn the rules of flying a drone in airspace.
Was that tough for you to do? Is it like a, because I would imagine if, you know, the first thing I heard when I wanted to get one of these was I had to take a pilot's test, and I'm sure I would fail that. Is it a tough test to take, or what was it like?
It's pretty intense. I mean, there's a lot about weather, a lot about aeronautical maps, and really knowing them and studying them. You more than likely have to take some kind of online course or a actual physical course where they pretty much prep you for the test. And the test comes in pretty much three or four different versions. So one person may get a version that's more weather heavy, and the other person may get a version that's more aeronautical heavy. So you really have to study. It took me a while to study for the test to say that, okay, I'm ready to take this exam, and then take it and pass it the first time. Because if you pass it and fail it, you have to wait another 14 days before you can take it again.
Wow. So let's talk about the business of drones. You know, whenever I think of this space getting really crowded, I think of a South Park episode where the drones were flying everywhere and there were little police drones and stuff. What is the marketplace like? What is your competition like? And can you, you know, I don't want to make this a personal question, but can somebody make money doing this?
You can definitely make money doing this if you know pretty much what you're doing, how to market, what you're marketing towards, you know, have a business model, and definitely just try to go after, be sure that you operate safely, have all of the paperwork that you need to have in terms of insurance and licensing, and then, you know, go out and practice, you know, having a drone and having a drone business, it takes a lot of practice for you to really get good at it.
I see that you are a former TV. You worked in TV as well as a regular photojournalist. But, you know, I'm curious to know, because I heard this was these drones were eventually going to replace traffic helicopters and news helicopters. Is that likely coming?
Yeah, so currently I'm actually still a photojournalist. Yes, so that's pretty much the plan. There is another station that's in town that is the first station to actually have a drone in-house, which is CBS. So they actually have and bought a drone for their newsroom that a couple of the photojournalists operate and who have been licensed and go out and do different types of shots for them, whether it's for news or for other departments within the news department. So that's I think it's a pretty much of a long ways off from still replacing helicopters, because there's so many still a lot of rules and regulations of do's and don'ts. Like, you can't fly over people. Mm-hmm. So that's an issue, right, in itself,
right,
because
right.
Choppers can.
Yeah, and then the other
so
thing too, but I
kind of limit
yeah.
what you can do with it so far.
And I've noticed just on an international basis too, I've been seeing a lot more of the drone video and news footage, especially from disaster scenes. It can get you in there kind of mm-hmm. close and personal, can it?
Yes, it can. And overseas, the rules are a little bit more lax depending upon where you go than if you go here. If we're on an active scene, you know, we cannot put a drone up in the air. The scene has to be pretty inactive, but it still provides good use because the fact of the matter is we're getting closer than a chopper shot would get. And the picture quality is absolutely stunning.
Yeah, yeah.
So most of the drones are in what's called a 4K resolution, and now they're moving from 4K up into 5.25 or possibly even 6K by this time next year. So, and it's an immediacy thing. So, you know, we can get the drone back, or we can transmit live back to the station the video that's being captured at the time.
And Carmine Means is the Drone Girl. You can follow them on Twitter at Drone Girl Photog, and also DroneGirlPhotography.com. Carmine Means is a multi-Emmy award-winning television news photojournalist. Carmine, good to have you with us in the opening bell. Best of luck in your business.
Well, thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right. Good to talk to you as well. It's 529. Over to the newsroom. Vic Vaughn is standing by. Vic.
Hey, good morning, Steve. An apartment fire this morning. 6 children rescued. One of their rescuers is hospitalized with burns. Our report next.
This is the opening bell.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. Samsung is taking new steps to deal with those fiery phones.
I saw small red bursts, and then it started to smoke. Sizzle and burn on the nightstand.
Even after the company's massive recall of the ill-fated Galaxy Note 7s, due to reports that some were catching fire, Samsung says some folks are still holding on to the phones. So the company is now rolling out a virtual kill switch that will shut down the last remaining Note 7s sold here in the U.S. Sasha Segan is with PC Magazine.
This is Samsung's last-ditch effort to get these phones out of people's hands.
The kill switch will come in the form of an over-the-air software update, which has been agreed to by 3 of the country's biggest wireless providers. It's designed to prevent the Note 7 from charging at all and will eliminate their ability to work as mobile devices, according to Samsung. In effect, turning them into bricks.
People do need to return these phones. They've been recalled. They're dangerous.
With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:40, this Tuesday edition of the opening bell. Have you made plans for your retirement? Do you know where you're going to live? You may be going to live in your own home. Thought about going maybe to a retirement community? What are the options? Well, one of them is something called Honeyco Homes. And we have the CEO of the Chicago company on with us today, Zachary Wilson. And we're going to be talking a little about this. Zachary Watson, I'm sorry. And just a number of options for independent living beyond staying in your home or going into those senior living communities. Zachary, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
It's good to have you, because I did a report on this a year or so ago, and the idea of staying in your home, which I believe is called retiring in place. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, most people refer to it as aging in place.
Aging in place. So it's a big trend, and people do not absolutely want to live in retirement communities as we know them, because they just some have a pretty bad reputation. So what is the space here, and what are the trends, and where do you come in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we obviously all know that the institutionalization of aging is something that basically everybody wants to avoid. 90% of people want to stay in their own home, and yet, you know, 96 of the people over 65 manage to stay out of these institutions. So we know that people are doing something, but we just weren't quite sure what it was. And so what we found is that really people avoid these institutions at all costs, but they're also very expensive. So what we've done is we've created a technology platform to allow people to stay where they want, which is in their own home, and really give it to them affordably.
And so how does the rental aspect of what you do come into this?
So my partners actually have, they founded a large single family rental platform. So we have access to literally hundreds of thousands of homes that are available for rent that we can tie the system into, so that if somebody wants to, you know, take the equity out of their home and put it into an income yielding portfolio, you know, for their later years, that they'll be able to have a stable, you know, stream of cash flow as they rent their home versus owning it, so they don't have to pay for the water heater when it blows up, or even do the yard maintenance for that matter.
And is this, I'm guessing this is something that you have to plan for well in advance, or can somebody who is at the retirement age ready to do this now jump in?
Yeah, we actually even can step in before retirement. You know, the smart home itself, I think, has just massive potential to run. And what we do is we really kind of curate all of the devices we think are most helpful as a person who wants to live in a smart home. And we install it in the house and we service it for the resident so that he or she doesn't have to deal with all of that. And we can actually start really kind of helping people get accustomed to the idea that the home that you've cared for your whole life is now something that can care back for you.
The financial aspect of it was my question, really. And that is, you know, let's say you have somebody who's owned their home for a long time. They're at the retirement age now. They have the choice of aging in place or choosing Honeyco. Are they able to do that? And what if they have no money when they're, you know, at the retirement age? Is this an option for them, or do they have to plan for it well in advance of the retirement year?
Well, so I would actually say that it's far easier to move into a Honeyco home or adopt the platform for a home that you already live in than it would be to actually get up and move to one of these facilities that probably is 3 to 6 times more expensive than the average market rent in that area. So in other words, no, you don't really have to plan for it. It's about $1,000 to install the system and $150 to $350 a month to maintain the service.
One of the big issues of aging in place is a couple of big issues are, number one, sometimes it's costly to renovate a home to get it ready for retirement. Sometimes there has to be physical changes. You've been talking about the technology aspect of it. As seniors age, there's going to be more of the artificial intelligence, doctor robots, if you will. There's all kinds of technology now that would need a broadband connection to help monitor them, perhaps. And then the other part of it too is just the money aspect of it. They've bought this home, they don't want to leave. And then there's also the connection aspect. Many people who age in place often become, you know, these pods off by themselves. How do you address the latter part of that? Are these in communities? Do you help people have this sense of community?
So we have a real life person who visits with all of our residents called a Honeyco ambassador. And that person is there to really help the resident either volunteer, continue education, really find social avenues of engagement so that, you know, we don't create a nation of shut-ins for the booming retirees that are coming up, right? So we want to be able to offer multi-generational neighborhoods with a connection to all avenues of social meaning.
So let's talk a little bit about the technology aspect of it, because I'm sure that you being in this space know what the future might hold. What are some of the technological requirements that a home for a retiree in the future might need?
Well, an internet connection is really a big one. There's always the workaround of a cellular hotspot, but certainly, I would actually say that, you know, having an advisor or a service to help you decide on some of the you know, main decisions around, okay, what type of equipment am I going with? You know, what protocol? We don't have a standard protocol yet across all the Internet of Things. So what is it going to be? You know, is it going to be Iris or Google or Samsung? These protocols that actually tie the devices together. So we have to make some decisions early on, and I think that having an advisor or somebody savvy to help with those decisions can really make a big difference.
Zachary, this is, in the end, it's something that people who are even in their 40s should probably start planning for. A lot of us don't even think about where we're going to be when we're 65 or older. This is something that we need to wrap our heads around, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, the financial component of this is really one of the biggest drivers. And if we don't start that conversation earlier, then it just gets tougher when the time comes.
Zachary Watson is from honeyco.com. You can go onto their website, learn more at honeyco.com. And Zachary, good to have you with us this morning on the Opening Bell.
Thanks very much for having me, Steve.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
552, welcome back to the program. Among the big headlines this morning, President-elect Donald Trump has announced his choice of ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson to be his Secretary of State, hailing him as the most accomplished business, one of the most accomplished business leaders and international deal makers in the world. His Tillerson's confirmation will have a lot of trouble, though, because of his ties to Russia and also his work with ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil stands to gain millions, if not billions, of dollars if sanctions against Russia are lifted. Also this morning on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 72 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures are higher as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodity now, and here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. There's no question that weather is having an impact and will have an impact on both grain and livestock markets. Yesterday, we saw cash hogs in the Midwest move higher because of the influx of cold air that slows down weight gains in hogs. The same thing happens in cattle. Extremely cold, typically slowing down weight gains in cattle, making them less available to packers. So we had a total green screen at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, with the December lean hogs gaining 57 cents a hundredweight. The December live cattle contract up $1.70, and the January feeder cattle contract up $2.70 a hundredweight. The December lean hog contract will terminate tomorrow. And then turning to the grain market, soybeans traded lower yesterday because of weather, rain in Argentina. Wheat and corn traded firm yesterday as well, but soybeans, even though they got some pretty good export news, didn't react positively. Fresh sale of 256,000 tons of U.S. soybeans to China. And one other sale that was noteworthy yesterday, and that was Saudi Arabia buying 725,000 tons of hard wheat. Some of that may come from the United States. Well, today we're going to try flying again, this time to Washington, D.C., where tomorrow we'll conduct our final year-end interview with Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. You have a good day, and I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. As we check a few more headlines here on the Opening Bell before we leave you, Quest Diagnostics reporting today that a hack of its internet application on its network has exposed the personal health information of about 34,000 people. That news developing as you slept overnight. Also today, we're learning more about the decision by Boeing, deal by Boeing with Iran to sell all of those jets. Boeing, the Chicago-based company, has agreed to provide financing for the first six planes it sells to Iran. That's according to the chief executive of Iran Airlines. Iran Air will pay 15% of prices of the passenger jet from Iran's development fund. Boeing trading up just about 0.5% this morning. Also from the UK, official figures show that inflation in the UK jumped to a two-year high of 1.2% during the year to November in the wake of higher clothing and fuel costs. The scale of the increase from the previous month of 0.9% was unexpected. Economists had penciled in a more modest rise of 1.1%. Now, the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday, December 13. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics publishes the import and export prices for November today. Manpower's quarterly employment outlook survey comes out. The Federal Open Market Committee of the U.S. Federal Reserve holds its first day of two-day meetings. Decision on interest rates tomorrow. Everybody expects rates to rise for just the second time in a decade when the meeting wraps up on Wednesday tomorrow. Central Bank has held interest rates at close to zero since the Great Recession. Also today, IEA oil market report, including the monthly figures on demand, stocks, supply, trade, and prices. The word of the year, Merriam-Webster Words of the Year 2016 will be announced, compiled by analyzing the top searches on a dictionary's on the dictionary publisher's website. We will see that announced later today. And Smith and Wesson Holding Corporation holds a special meeting of shareholders to vote on a proposal to change its name to American Outdoor Brands Corporation. If approved, the name change would be effective on about January 1st. The company has said the name change from that of the famous U.S. gunmaker would reflect its expanding strategic focus on areas other than just guns. That's the opening bell for today. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition at 5 o'clock. Hopefully you'll join us then. And we will continue to follow your money throughout this morning on the Steve Cochran Show, coming up next. I'm Steve Grzanich. Have a great day.